Well, good morning to everybody for this round number three of what we call the family feud. We are definitely dealing with the dynamics that you and I call family. I don't know John Mayer either. I have no idea about his journey of faith, if he even has one at all, but I can tell you the words of that song certainly represent the very tension that we're trying to work through here. What does it mean to be part of a family? What does it mean when we want to run and detach from the craziness of our family, but when we wake up and we recognize that you cannot detach? And it's not because there's a rule against detaching, it's just because you can't detach. It's family. And so we're working through trying to how to have the best families that we can have, and then how to kind of polish off the edges from all the stuff that we've received from our family of origin. And we're gonna move a little bit further down the path today. I wanna talk to you a little bit about boundaries. It was about 1985 when I was a lowly freshman here at Southern Methodist University. I'd come over here from Shreveport, Louisiana. It's always an exciting time to be a freshman. You move into the dormitory. I moved right over here to Letterman Hall. It doesn't even exist anymore, but at the time, there was a dorm called Letterman Hall. That's where I moved, and I lived with my roommate on the very last door on the left, all the way down the hallway at the very, very end on the second floor. It was a lot of fun. You start unpacking and you start putting out all the stuff that's important to you. It was records at the time and CDs. You got to get your stereo system built, put all your posters up. And then somewhere in the process, my roommate pulled out of a box that he had with a bunch of stuff he had in it, a piece of plastic. It was about 5 inches by 5 inches. It was a square. And I don't know where he got it. I don't know if he'd ripped it off of a wall himself, but it was a women's bathroom sign. And it had the universal, you know, stick figure of the little woman in the dress, and it said women's restroom. And we thought it would be really cool if we put it on our door outside. And so we did. And we got a little sticky tape. We stuck it right up there, and we thought this would be a great way, you know, to meet girls. And it is amazing what you mistake for genius, right, when you're 17 years old. And sure enough, it was the last door in the hallway, so it was kind of loud. We had the sign there that said women's restroom, and every now and then, a random girl would just open the door and walk in. And she would clearly identify, this is not the women's restroom. And I would say something goofy, I'm Paul from Shreveport, and do you want to, like, hang out and watch TV or something? And it never worked, ever. Nobody ever took me up on the offer. In fact, they thought we were total creepers, probably. But it was not very long, maybe a day or two. I don't remember. It was a day or two. We had the sign in there. It worked for a little while. And then eventually our RA came down. And the RA is the person that governs the dorm, and ripped the thing off and sat us both down and said, I need to talk to you two. This sign's inappropriate. You can't do this. And they were totally right. It was inappropriate. But I remember them giving us a lecture on boundaries. And they said, this sign creates an inappropriate boundary. And I didn't know what an inappropriate boundary was at that time. But I've since come to appreciate boundaries more than ever. And I want to spend a little bit of our time together today before we engage in the sacrament of Holy Communion talking about the importance of boundaries and appropriate boundaries relative to families. Because boundaries really, at the end of the day, end up being the catalyst for healthy relationships. Because what we've done for a couple weeks is talk about how important it is to fight for your families and to fight for relationships and to get back in the ring. And the only reason that we have a relationship with God has nothing to do with the fact that we got our act together, because we didn't, but because God said, even though they don't have their act together, they're worth the fight. And so God sent his only begotten son, Jesus. And the only reason we have a relationship with God is because God decided that we were worth the fight, even though we had done nothing to demonstrate the contrary. And so we're called as people of faith to model that as best we can in our families. And even though they don't have their act together, to love and to extend grace. But that begs the question, well, what do I do, Paul, if I'm in harm's way? Right? If I'm in an abusive relationship, what does that mean to keep fighting for the relationship? Do I got to keep showing up and getting hit? Right, if I'm dealing with an addict, do I got to keep showing up and riding around town with them when they're all liquored up and dealing with them when they come home and dealing with all the behavior that an addict brings? If I've got a prodigal, you know, what does that mean? And preachers are kind of guilty of oversimplifying this and making it sound so black and white. And we have these pithy little statements like, you know, the best defense is no defense when we're talking about turning the other cheek. But then we go home on Monday, and it's volatile sometimes among family members, and we think, well, what did that mean scripturally? Do I have to stay in the fight if it puts me in the line of fire? Do I have the privilege of being a person of faith, of stepping out of the line of fire so that I'm not harmed? And this is where boundaries come in. This is where it gets really, really important, because sometimes we confuse staying involved with the relationship with surrendering to everything about the relationship. And those are two different things. But the scriptures sometimes offer a lot of wisdom, but maybe not as much clarity as we would like. Here, for example, Galatians 6:2, carry each other's burdens, and in this way you shall fulfill the law of Christ. Okay, we get that, right? We're supposed to do things for other people that they are incapable for doing themselves. Sacrificial love is what that's all about. Paul writes that to a church in Galatia. And we get that, but we think, well, do I have to do that if I'm in the line of fire? I don't know. Just move a couple passages down in the very same letter that Paul wrote, Galatians 6:5. But each one should carry his own load. Well, which one is it? I got to carry the load, or they got to carry their own load? And the point is, there's a tension there that exists that is not always resolved in terms of black and white language. And I hope today we'll get a little bit of clarity from the third chapter of the book called Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes is way back in the Old Testament. It just means wisdom, and it's kind of a collection of wisdom. There's not a lot of narrative. There's no narrative, in fact, at all in Ecclesiastes. There's not like any good guys or bad guys or giants to be slain. It's just like a collection of what the Bible calls wisdom. And we think it's written by a guy named Solomon, who the scriptures tell us was the wisest person that's ever lived. And Solomon is revealing to the readers what's important to God. And Solomon, I think, gives us the biblical sanction for boundaries. Here it goes, Ecclesiastes 3. There's a time for everything. You may have heard this in a popular song by a group called The Birds. There's a time for everything and a season for every activity under the heavens, and a time to be born and a time to die, and a time to plant and a time to uproot. Now listen to this. It gets pretty good. There's a time to kill and there's a time to heal. There's a time to tear down, but there's also a time to build. It's not always the same. There's a time to weep, there's a time to laugh. There's a time to mourn and a time to dance, a time to scatter stones. And guess what? There's a time to go gather the very same stones. But they're not always the same time. There's a time to embrace. And some of you need to really hear this. There's a time to embrace, and there's a time to refrain from embracing. You don't have to be getting hurt in order to fight for the relationship. Sometimes love is better served from a distance. Sometimes love is better loved with you out of the house. We believe that. And it's confusing sometimes for people of faith, and the church is not always the best resource to convince you otherwise. It goes on. There is a time to search and a time to give up. There's a time to keep and a time to throw away. There's a time to tear and a time to mend. There's a time to be silent and there's a time to speak. There's a time to love and a time to hate and a time for war and a time for peace. It's interesting when you read this, the first one, the first verse, that's not in our control. Time to be born, not in your control. Time to die, usually not in your control. That's up to the divine. But everything else, there's a list beyond that, 13 things. Every one of them's in your power. Every one of them involves a choice. Every one of them involves a boundary. And I think Solomon really wants us to understand this, because Solomon understands probably this dynamic. In fact, there's a lot in Ecclesiastes about the nature of family relationships. And in that same text, there's this verse that's dropped right in the middle, and it's very poetic, and it empowers us. It sanctions us to create boundaries. And boundaries are tricky, but they decide what gets in and what stays out. What's allowed in and what has to stay on the other side. Boundaries are very, very important in that which they determine. Now, it is the same with people. Boundaries define us. What is me, authentically me, and what is not me, right? What is healthy and what is destructive. And knowing our boundaries, particularly relative to other people, when it comes to those we love the most, sometimes boundaries get way muddied, if we even have them at all. Now, some great research and literature out there. I like a guy named Henry Cloud. He writes a lot about boundaries, and Dr. Cloud always talks about how easy it is to see boundaries in the real world, in the physical world, right? You see a door up, you know there's a boundary. There's something on this side of the door, there's something on that side. If I pass through the door, I go from one boundary to the next, a wall. A wall is a very physical indicator of a boundary. A lot of boundaries in the real world, a sign, speed limit sign, right? A moat. Skin is a boundary, keeps the blood inside, doesn't let the blood come on the other side, right? A lot of physical expressions of boundary in the physical world. The problem is, in the emotional world, in the psychological world, boundaries are very, very difficult to see. We don't always know where they are. It would be like your property line, which is a boundary. What if you didn't have a property line? See, with a property line, you know exactly where to mow and where to rake. Very seldom, if ever, I would guess, did you arbitrarily just show up at your neighbor's house and start raking their lawn, right? You don't do that because they have a property line, you have a property line. What if you didn't know the property line? And what if God came down and said, you're responsible for the upkeep and the well-being of your property, and I'm going to hold you accountable, and I want you to treat it judiciously, and I want you to take care of it. Oh, but by the way, I'm not going to tell you where the property line is. How confusing would that be if you didn't know where to stop and you didn't know where to start? And that's exactly what happens to us so often emotionally and spiritually with the people that we love. We don't know where the line stops and where it starts. And when relationships go south and they get tense and they get dysfunctional and there's pain and there's anger and there's resentment and there's betrayal and there's dishonesty, whoa, it's tough to weed all that out unless we have a boundary. It's a boundary that determines what we are responsible for and what we are not responsible for. And what I've discovered in the faith is that many, many people of faith, while well-intentioned, they almost feel selfish about having boundaries. And they feel selfish by drawing a line in the sand and saying, no, I'm not going to let that behavior in the door ever because I'm in harm's way. And again, pastors sometimes are the worst offenders of this in the way that we inadvertently preach. And I got to tell you, the number of women in particular that we have coming to this church that aren't necessarily even part of this church, but they come here because they're in a domestic violence situation. And they've been to a church that said, no, go back in the relationship. You got to be submissive to your husband. But they don't know that they can be submissive and still have a boundary. And this is such a big deal. We have a whole ministry just for this, by the way. And this is not a sermon necessarily about domestic violence, but you know we have a whole ministry just for this? A whole ministry. A staff dedicated just to dealing with this issue because it's so prevalent in our community. People don't know where to go, and we want to help you establish your boundaries. So if you're in it or you know anybody that's in it, by all means, tell them about the church because we have people and resources that can help you come up with your boundaries so that you live a healthy life. And it's hard to do that when the lines are muddied. And we don't have a lot of time today, but I just want to give you one tool in the toolkit. We can help you with a lot of tools. There's a lot of tools to help you establish boundaries. But I want to give you the biggest tool, the most effective tool. And it may be the most obvious tool. It's the one that you've had in your kit since birth, but you probably forgot that you had it, and you probably were coached never to use it. But it's the most valuable tool that you can have, and that's your words. In particular, two letters, no, N-O. If you learn the word no, I hate to sound like cliche, it will change your life. It is the single greatest source of establishing healthy boundaries. No, right? And we all want to say yes, but you don't have to. In fact, it's not even wise. Proverbs 22:3, listen to this. The prudent see danger. This is kind of cool. Some versions of the Bible will say evil instead of danger. How's that? The prudent see evil or danger, and they take refuge. But the simple, the non-wise, they keep going, and they pay the penalty. See, there's permission right there. See, on the one hand, I want to contend that we should fight for our relationships, and we should love, and we should pray, and we should try to keep the pulse of conversation in our relationships going and do everything that we can, but it's not always black and white. Sometimes we have to drop in a boundary, and Proverbs says the prudent people see evil and they take refuge from it. They get out of dodge. It's the non-prudent people, the non-wise people that see evil and they keep going into evil. You don't have to do that. The Bible takes this very seriously. In James, it says, let your yes be yes and let your no be no. Establish boundaries. There's a time to embrace and there is a time to refrain from embracing. When it involves danger or evil, wise people take refuge. Some of you need to be encouraged and permitted and know that biblically, that's okay. In fact, it's mandated. But sometimes, as a culture, we're not very good at teaching our children to say no. And so we're born with this in our toolbox, but we take it out of the toolbox right away. And as a kid, sometimes, you know, right, parents, we don't do this intentionally, but we don't want to hear our children say no, right? Get in the car. No. What? I'm sorry, right? No, we don't. So we tell our children right away, you must always be compliant with an adult. And so we pull, though we don't even know it, the word no right out of their vocabulary. And we don't encourage and affirm when they use the term. I have this great aunt. Maybe she was a great, great aunt. I don't know. She was from New Orleans. She's about 157 years old. And she would come up on the Trailways bus from New Orleans to Shreveport to see us in the summer times. And I loved her. I don't mean that. But I got to tell you, her breath was terrible, like terrible. And she had some kind of a thing going on here on her face that had like a hair or something coming out of it. I'm not mean to be gross here, but you had the same aunt. And it was like a harpoon, okay? And she loved to mash it against your cheek. And it would draw blood, And I didn't want to hug her. But she would get off that bus at the Trailway station in Shreveport, and my mom would say, go hug your aunt. And I was like, I don't want to hug her. It hurts, right? No, I don't want to hug her. And my mom said, no, you got to do it, right? There's a demonstration of love. You got to step into an area that hurts. And we disarm children from the primary tool that they have to establish boundaries. And we need to teach them it's okay to say, no, I'm not doing that. No, that hurts. See, we need to empower the use of the word no. Can you imagine how different most of your decisions would have been as a teenager if you just had embraced the term no? No. I think that's harmful. And if we had taught our children the confidence of those two letters from a very early age, that they had the ability to choose. Because when you embrace the term no and you embrace this, you do away with two things. One, you do away with resentment. See, resentment is usually born from saying yes when you want to say no. You really don't want to go to that party. Some of you had this last night happen, right? You got invited to a social occasion and you said yes just to be compliant. But you went and then what happened? You resented being there. Well, multiply that out with your family. When you say yes and you're compliant, but you really are screaming no, that's dangerous or that's harmful, or every time we do that, it ends up in an argument. You just go and you show up and then the argument happens and then you are resentful. And all you've done is taken a giant toxin and planted it as a seed down in your gut. No is so incredibly liberating. And the thing else no does, not only does it diffuse resentment, but it diffuses reaction. See, because no is not a reaction. See, nothing breaks down a relationship more than a reaction. You gotta stop drinking, rah! We throw a fit and we throw glasses and we start yelling and screaming and we kick all their stuff outside the lawn. That's a reaction. No is, you can drink all you want, but the kids and I aren't gonna be around to see it. That's no. That's a response. See, a response is different than a reaction. Response is powerful. Reaction leaves control in their hands. A response leaves you in full control. You gotta stop your yelling, and then you start yelling and screaming at each other. That's a reaction. They're still in control. No is you can yell all you want. I'm not gonna be around to hear it. Ah, that's so calming. It's so powerful. It's so authoritative. Right, a reaction is taking the computer and ripping it out of the wall and throwing it in the trash and your porn habit and rah, 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 rah. No, that's a reaction. It solves nothing. A response is, you can watch porn all you want, but I'm not going to share my body intimately with you while you share it with all of those women on the screen. You see how this works? It's the most powerful tool in your inventory to establish boundaries that allow you to keep working for a relationship, but to not have to put yourself in harm's way. Because there's not one part of me as a pastor, and there's not one thing that I can discern from the scriptures that somehow suggests God wants you to protect and preserve the relationship at the expense of your life. He did that for us with Jesus. And so you don't have to endure. And the privilege is to recognize that boundaries are a biblical mandate. And so we want to encourage you, and we're going to jump into the sacrament, but we want to encourage you to really lean on your small group and really lean on the church and let our ministers talk with you and work with you to establish boundaries. And when you don't have the courage or the clarity to kind of do it yourself, there are a lot of people in the world that can really help you, but I'm convinced it is absolutely essential in having your families be as healthy as they can be, but more importantly, giving you the peace of mind that God would want for your life, the peace that surpasses all understanding, even when your families don't get it. Let's pray. Lord, boundaries are tough, but we thank you for allowing them. Lord, you are a God of boundaries. You're a God of property lines. You've demonstrated that in the earliest pages of the Old Testament all the way through the New. Lord, help us to embrace the privilege of establishing boundaries, to discern healthily what gets in and what stays out, so that we can continue to love and dispense grace the way that you want us to, but not such that it puts us in harm's way so that we end up destroying our own lives. In your son's name we pray, amen.